Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Okay, first up, a mea culpa. I was not always a huge fan of Apple CEO and Steve Jobs' successor, Tim Cook. He seems like a nice man, highly capable, etc., but he was a chief operating officer. That's somebody who counts beans, watches supply chains, and fulfills orders from customers. When Steve died and Tim took over, it was the end of an era for sure, but Apple was still there. Could it still be the Apple we were used to, though? Turns out it could get better. I've had former and present employees tell me that though Steve Jobs was like a prophet, let alone genius marketer, the company kind of exhaled when Tim Cook took over. Not to relax, but not to live in fear either. Tim Cook also brought some values to the company that were not there before. Steve Jobs, more of a hippie-style libertarian. Tim Cook, different animal.
The thing that I discovered that was most surprising to me was, you know, how he's bringing these progressive values to the company and how he's using Apple's massive resources to try to make a difference in those areas that we mentioned earlier: accessibility, education, inclusion and diversity, privacy, the environment. And he's doing amazing work in the environment and the supply chain, you know, the conditions in the supply chain.
That is Leander Caney, and his new biography of Tim Cook is the first of its kind, but is likely to stay best of breed for quite a while. My journey slash opinion on Tim Cook mirrors Leander's, so let's get to it.
So, name and title, Leander Caney, and I'm the author of Tim Cook, The Genius Who Took Apple to the Next Level. I'm also the editor and publisher of cultofmag.com, which is like an Apple blog.
Thank you for your time, Leander, and thank you for the book. And here's why I'm thanking you specifically and one-to-one. I read this and really had to re-examine the way I have been looking at Tim Cook for the last 10 years, because I've had some analysts on my show over the last, say, 5 years or so that were a lot were pretty harsh on Tim Cook, and I think that I kind of like let that seep into my mindset. But I tell you what, I was only about 50 pages into your book, and I was like, he's nailing this. I mean, Leander's really got the right take on Tim Cook. Are you getting any kind of response similar like that? I'm basically giving you a mea culpa right now.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I hoped would happen. You know, that's exactly why I wrote the book, because I was kind of skeptical too. You know, early on, it was like, you know, because Steve Jobs is such a hard act to follow.
Right.
You know, so important in the tech industry, at the forefront, you know, such a visionary, had introduced so many important products. Who could follow someone like Steve Jobs? But I think Tim Cook has proven to be really, you know, very, very capable, and has been a great, great, great steward. And you know, a lot of things that he hasn't had a public profile. You know, he hasn't given any interviews, really, only a handful of interviews over his entire career.
Right.
He was always in the background. No one really sort of knew what he was like. And you could tell at the first, you know, he was kind of wooden in his appearances and wasn't very comfortable. He's only sort of really come into his own the last couple of years. And of course, like with the incredible success of the company, you can see that, you know, he's actually a really good successor.
I agree with everything there. And I think that part of my self-examination when I was prepping for this interview was I think maybe I just never forgave Steve Jobs for dying in the first place. You know what I mean? I think a lot of fanboys fell into that.
Yeah, definitely. Very, very disappointed. You know, Cook had this amazing, Jobs, charisma, so magnetic,
right.
and so likable. And of course, you know, really in his personal life, he wasn't really that likable.
No, he was kind of a dick.
He wasn't kind of a dick. He was a huge dick. He was a huge dick to everyone, you know, including his own daughter. Yeah, you know, to go back to your earlier point as well about the reaction, I mean, like, you know, the comments on it, oh my God, you know, like the stuff I'm getting on Twitter is really negative. It's all completely negative. They're like, oh my God, Tim Cook is the worst thing that ever happened to Apple. He's driving that company into the ground.
No, so, okay, let's start disabusing these trolls of this theory, because I think I'm going to go with, there's so many ways we could go, but you mentioned Tim coming out of his shell a little bit. I'll go back to the Apple event, I'm sure that both of us were at, where Tim introduced the watch. And to me, Tim took it up to 11 for him, you know, which is, you know, we're not all Steve Jobs, but he took it up on stage because that was his product, right?
Right. This is the Apple Watch is the first product that has come out from Apple with no input whatsoever from Steve Jobs. According to Johnny Ive, they started talking about it a few weeks after Jobs died. So he's had no input into this. Yeah, it's the first pure Tim Cook product.
And a lot of the analysts that I've spoken with, and you've covered on your website as well, thought that he was an operator only, like that he was just nuts and bolts, ones and zeros, and you know, supply chain moderator. But they didn't think that he would have the R&D chops to push it through. But he kind of does, and he does it in a very, I have to say, quietly brave kind of way. And I, one thing I want to pull out, and I'm going to ask you to help me elucidate, are the six tenets that Apple, as you point out, Apple kind of slowly rolled these onto their websites. But Tim has the six tenets. Hey, can we go through those a little bit? I mean, let's start with accessibility. Why is that important to Tim Cook?
Excuse me, because it makes it truly democratic, the products. And of course, you know, we should say that accessibility is the ability for anybody to use Apple's products. And I was just walking here on the sidewalks, and I went up a wheelchair ramp, you know, on the sidewalk. And that's a good example of, like, you know, accessibility. Like, you know, so if you're in a wheelchair, you can use the sidewalks here in New York. And the same thing with the iPhone, with things like VoiceOver. I mean, we've interviewed people who are totally blind and can use an iPhone.
Yeah.
Because the phone will tell you, it will describe to you what's on the screen. And you can even take pictures using this system. You know, it'll recognize faces or people, you know, so when you point the camera at someone. That seems to me kind of incredible. And he's been a big advocate of that. And I think, you know, there are principled reasons. You know, he wants to make it democratic. But there's also good business reasons, too, I think.
Sure.
You know, I mean, why would you want to cut out people, a certain section of people from your customer base?
Right, exactly. And going to his philosophy really was in the Bloomberg article that was also in your book. But he basically says, people, strategy, and execution. If you nail those three things, you'll be fine. Well, duh. I mean if you know what I mean? If you build a good team and you have a good plan and product, and then you execute that plan, well, yeah.
But the devil's in the details, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's what Tim is really good at. And as I went through the book, I just got more and more impressed with his take. Let's go a little bit more into Tim as a person, though. Let's talk about his love of Steve Jobs. Like, if I read this correctly, he actually offered part of his liver to Steve before Steve died.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And of course, you know, Steve was horrified. And said, no way, you know, he didn't want Tim to make that kind of sacrifice. But yeah, that is pretty crazy, isn't it?
It is. And in the first chapter of your book, you describe not a deathbed conversation, but basically Steve says, Tim, come over now. And Tim tries to not take the CEO job three times or give Steve a chance to back out of offering him the CEO job. Do you think that he really was that tentative, or did he just want to be convinced by somebody he admired?
I think probably a bit of both. He felt that Steve was going to survive and was going to stick around and be the chairman of the company. And I think he was a little bit trepidatious about having Jobs still there as chairman, because knowing Jobs' character, that he would be meddling in what he did, and that maybe even though he was CEO in name, maybe he wouldn't be, you know, he would just be CEO in name, you know,
right.
But Jobs would continue to run the company. I think that was one of his fears. And maybe, you know, that personal connection that you mentioned as well, that he didn't want to sort of face up to the fact that that Jobs, you know, wasn't able to do the job anymore. He co-founded the company, he'd helped build it up, and then, of course, he saved it in his what perhaps the most amazing turnaround in corporate history. So I think he was a little bit reluctant to do that when Steve was still there.
It makes sense. Again, Tim is intensely private. I wonder, I mean, that's probably why you're getting some of the pushback and trolling on Twitter, right? Because he just doesn't seem to really care how he's perceived.
His former school mates, you know, his school friends, they describe a character that was very outgoing, very gregarious, great sense of humor, a lot of fun to be around. And the same people at IBM and the same people at Apple, you know, his colleagues at Apple say that he has a great sense of humor. He's often making fun of himself. He loves to hang out with people, but he keeps his private life private. A weird thing is that, you know, no one knows whether he has a partner or not, or he never gets photographed at restaurants or nightclubs or you know, events. And I didn't dig into that because I wanted to. He wants to keep his private life private, and I didn't want to turn the book into some kind of like TMZ. You know, I didn't want to be too tabloidy.
Right.
And I was like, if he wants to, you know, keep it private, I'll respect that. And because all I was interested in was his work, and you know how he runs the company.
Yeah, and I appreciate that approach, because that's what keeps the book so good. Because I think you really have tapped into a kind of a revelation type of a subject with this guy, because he kind of flies under the radar in some ways.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. That's very kind of you to say that. Yeah, definitely. You know, he hasn't had a public profile at all. You know, he hasn't hardly given any interviews. Jobs was extremely public. You know, he'd given, yeah. there's a lot of material to draw on. He lived his life out in public all the time. But for most of Cook's career, you know, it hadn't been discussed. He hadn't given any interviews. It hadn't been examined. And that's, you know, that, for an author, that's a great, that's an opportunity, because, you know, that was my intention, I think, to change the perception. And I discovered a lot of things when I was writing the book as well about him that I didn't know. And I'm glad, you know, I'm glad you say that. I hope that message comes across.
What are a couple of things that you discovered during your research?
Well, but, you know, because like I said, people always ask me, you know, what's the most surprising thing you discovered? And I think they expect me to talk about his private life or, you know, some aspect of his character. The thing that I discovered that was most surprising to me was, you know, how he's bringing these progressive values to the company and how he's using Apple's massive resources to try to make a difference in those areas that we mentioned earlier: accessibility, education, inclusion and diversity, privacy, mm-hmm. The environment. And he's doing amazing work in the environment. The supply chain, you know, the conditions in the supply chain. And this was a surprise to me, because I kind of, you know, I follow the company very carefully, and I'd seen these different news announcements, you know, like Apple becomes 100% running on renewable power, but I didn't connect the dots.
Right.
You know, it didn't seem to be a pattern. And then during one of these interviews, one of the interviewees mentioned that he was really an advocate of these six values inside the company. This is what he was pushing inside the company. And it's kind of like, whoa, a light bulb went off, right?
Right.
And it was like, you know, okay, so it gives me a structure and a structure for the book to talk about these different things. And then since then, Apple's added them to its website. In the footer, you can see Apple values.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It talks about these six different things. But at the time when I was researching the book, they hadn't made it explicit. So that was the biggest surprise to me, was that, you know, he's one of America's like a leading progressive CEOs.
Right.
And he's trying to use his resources of this company to try to make things better.
Right. And, you know, a corporate annual budget is basically a statement of beliefs and morals. And so for Apple to follow through with that far really does go to distinctly his leadership. And I'm glad you really did pull that out. Another thing is, too, this, I mean, surreptitiously speaking, I really enjoy Tim Cook's beef with Mark Zuckerberg. I am enjoying the hell out of that. What's your take on that dynamic?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, me too. I love it when he tweaks him.
Yeah.
You know, personally, I have no fondness for Zuckerberg at all, personally or professionally. And I think, you know, Facebook is you know, the antithesis of Apple. You know, it cares about growth and the bottom line above all else. And given all these scandals that Facebook has gone through the last couple of years, you know, Zuckerberg keeps coming out and he appears before Congress or he gives a press conference and he says, yeah, we're going to fix it. You know, we're going to focus on privacy and we're going to fix all the problems. And then they do anything but. And you know, there was some fresh revelation this week about, you know, how they were abusing their customer data.
Right.
It's just become so routine. And I think that's, you know, the interesting thing about Apple under Cook. Apple's brand used to be about how it was easy to use, you know, ease of use, right? The one button mouse, it just works.
Yes.
And I think under Cook, it's, you know, it's about trust.
Yes.
You can trust Apple. And this is the thing that he brought out at their latest keynote presentation, when they talked about their new services, the new news service and the TV service and the Apple credit card. You know, underlying all of those was trust and security. And I think, you know, in an age when Facebook has so many scandals about data, that's a very important and good selling point.
Absolutely. I'm almost out of time. Last question. How did you land on the word genius in the subtitle for your book? Because when I first saw the book and it came in, I was like, yeah, that might be a stretch. And now I don't believe that. Now I believe it's dead on. How did you land on it?
Well, to be honest, I was in the same camp as you. I was a little bit reluctant because it, you know, it makes such a strong statement. And it was actually the publisher's idea, and the publisher pushed it. I wanted something that wasn't quite so. I didn't want it. Well, one of the reasons I didn't want to do it is because my previous book was the Al Johnny Ive, the genius that invented behind some of Apple's greatest products. So I didn't want to, you know, repeat that and make it. And it made it sound kind of a little bit pat, I think.
Right.
But I, you know, like you, I think it's true. He doesn't get the credit that he deserves for helping save Apple.
That's right.
Steve Jobs gets all the credit for that. You know, like, he was one of the major architects of what the company has turned into. And I think he's proven to be a very capable steward of it going forward.
Well, you've pulled back the curtain on Tim Cook with this book. Very well done, and thank you for your time. The author, Leander Caney, Cult of Mac editor and publisher, and his new book is Tim Cook, The Genius Who Took Apple to the Next Level. Thanks again for your time. I hope we can speak again soon.
Me too. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the opportunity, Jason.
That was Leander Caney. He's the editor at cultofmac.com and the author of the new biography titled Tim Cook, The Genius Who Took Apple to the Next Level. For links to Leander's book and his website, please check the show notes at KGORadio.com or just peek at the podcast notes. They're at the top. My thanks to Leander for an excellent book and for sharing his time, and to you for sharing yours. For executive producer Lee Hammer, I'm the host and the writer, Jason Middleton. This has been Techonomics. Have great weeks, everybody.